The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining me on this Saturday afternoon, September 15, 2012. I'm coming to you live from the White Network on the internet at the White Network, all one word, of course, .com. I am Carolyn Yeager, your host. This program is meant to be a casual 2-hour discussion format with one or more guests. Today, my guest is a very interesting man who has been fighting, and that's not too strong a word to use, for white interests for most of his life. His name is John Beattie. He lives in Ontario, Canada, and runs an organization he has named the British People's League. You can find it on the internet at British People's League, all one word, .com. Let me remind you who are listening at this moment, and we do have some listeners gathered already, and I know that there will be more, but you can ask questions of John by emailing them to carolyn@carolynyeager.com. So, John, thank you so much for being here today, and welcome.
Well, thank you for having me on and giving me this opportunity to speak.
I'm happy that you want to speak. That's great. So we're both happy.
Well, there's even a more pertinent reason I want to speak. This morning I found out a good friend, and he too has been in the cause up in Canada for years. He didn't die, but he came close to dying a couple of weeks ago. We have fought over the years, as so many competitors in the right wing do. But by the same token, I respect the guts he's had. His name is Donald Clark Andrews. He calls it the Nationalist Party. But he just put out the blurb today how he woke up in the hospital room. But what's my point? I was thinking about that later on today, thinking, wow, here's a 2-hour opportunity from a fine lady in the States, 2 hours to give my side of the story after 50 years of hearing crap. So that's why I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, wonderful. Go ahead.
Well, Carolina, we're just talking before the show started, folks, and I guess she's putting the real controversial stuff maybe in the second hour. So, yeah, let's talk about the good stuff first as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the university as a mature student after the National Socialist stuff that we're going to talk about maybe in the second hour, which lasted only 6 years from 1965 to 1971. So anyone who checks Wikipedia, it says I was a National Socialist from 1965 to 1978. Well, excuse me, I attended full-time the University of Toronto, St. Michael's College, as a mature student in 1975. So what, am I parading around with a swastika on the campus all by myself? But we'll get in Latin in the second hour. But I just want to get the time frame in because after I went back to university, and I saw the left slogans all over the halls and everywhere. It reminded me of a lot of people who have said over the years that once you've got the bug and your eyes are opened up that our race is being threatened with genocide, you can't lose the bug. And I couldn't lose the bug. I remarried, and my second wife was as British as can be. I ended up going over to Britain 3 times. She's passed away now. But she was a brave, brave woman. She had her nursing job. My point is, she and I founded the British People's League in 1975 after hours and hours of debate and discussions. We were right in the heart of Toronto. We were on the Bloor Viaduct, which is a very high bridge going over the core area of downtown Toronto. And we repeated it 100 times, like this Don Andrews I'd mentioned. It's a little bit pertinent here because he had been working a couple of years with what was called the Western Guard. So it would be like a fellow in Columbus, Ohio, who still does good work, John Gerhardy, at his White Unity rallies in Columbus, Ohio. So different people tried the all-encompassing approach. That's what I call it. the all-encompassing approach, meaning absorb German Canadians, Hungarians, British Canadians, you name it, of the subtribes. But it didn't. It doesn't work, Caroline. It doesn't work. I don't care how many you gather in a room. We all love our race. We're all hysterical over the race mixing. But whether it's over a few beer at some point, but somebody is going to be promoting their heroes within their subtribe, and the other guy's not going to like it. Serbians versus Croatians, Hungarians versus Poles. I'm sure you get my point.
Yes, I do, and I'm really interested. Saying this because I didn't know this is what you would say, but this is close to what I've been saying all along. So I'm in agreement with you, but you go ahead. And would you clarify what year was it that you started the BPL with your wife? After you finished college?
Yes, 1975, because I
You finished college in 1975. Or I thought you started college in 1975.
No, 73. I returned.
Okay.
73,
okay.
74, 75.
Okay.
And I brought up the other just to point out why it was ticking away at me the whole time I was attending university. Mm-hmm. Now, some of your listeners, I don't know what they're going to say about my next comment, but one of the guys that got me really thinking about things all over again, I can't escape, was a Professor Bloom, a Jew professor, political philosopher. He stirred up the students of the Democratic Society. They drove him off the Chicago campus. He ended up in Toronto. And I know I've read some good comments, I think, on your pages, too. And they're really good. You know, we don't need a good Jew telling us what to do as white race. We don't need a good queer telling us what to do. We'll just do it ourselves. That's fine and dandy. But the whole time attending university, this guy's philosophy and speeches were talking about saving your people as well with him. He, of course, he meant his Jewish race. But it just showed me that I had to do something. The all-encompassing approach wasn't working. The Western Guard back then, as they called it, they were very active at fighting against communism as such. But they were missing the majority of the Canadian people. Outside of the cities in Canada, the British stock is still by and far the majority. And I'm talking the villages, not the cities. But get a phone book. Peterborough, Ontario, Smith, Jones, Cooper, blah, blah, you name it. So
yeah, sure.
We thought of everything. We thought of the Northern League, a dozen. But then again, you get back to the all-encompassing, and it wasn't working. So then, okay, this is getting corny. Ricky Nelson's song, my favorite song, Garden Party. You can't please everyone, so you've got to please yourself. And that is simple as that. So I was born and raised with the Union Jack, even though in Toronto, my father was born in Scotland and British as hell, the whole upbringing. My whole street was bagpipes, 48th Highlanders. I didn't see a black face until I was 10 years old on the Toronto subway system. 1942, 1952, 10 years old, and I was just speechless. And, of course, when they first were coming in from Jamaica, they looked nice. And I looked up and, God, that's the mother. And I'm 10 years old staring at them like I thought they'd escaped from the zoo. I was shocked. Like, why are these people brown? And the girl was in a little pigtail. And they knew I looked shocked. But that's how beautiful and white Toronto was as a city. It was just fantastic. And then I went off the deep end. I went with a trip somehow. I ended up going to a German harmony club on Sherbourne Street for dances. I didn't like my own dances. You know, hey, bro, I want to dance. But at the German harmony club, tablecloths, flowers on the table. And there were Scottish, English girls everywhere because it was such a great, great deal there. And then from there, I just started to think, well, what's going wrong with my people? I spent my summers at a cottage area called Fenlon Falls. And they still seemed okay, but the smell of liberalism. So why about the German Harmony Club? Through there, I met an Austrian guy, and we ended up going on a trip to the States, cut the long story short, at 1965, right at the beginning of the hippie era. And I could feel the atmosphere. I thought, this is crazy. I'm not going any further with Willie. He can go travel Europe. I'm heading back to Canada where it's safe and conservative. It hit me. It hit me hard. So then the second I'll get into how I went off the deep end. But at this point, I've been through all this, and I wanted it to work. So I thought, well, you know, the Legion Halls and everything else, and they do not rehash the Second World War over and over and over. Maybe some of your listeners have had experiences the opposite, but I find a lot of German Canadian people are associate members of the Legion just because. I mean, it was a gathering of good people who wanted some fellowship. And this is across Canada. The villages are still British Canadian stock. The main watering hole is your local Legion. And they're still proud of their British roots. They don't rave about it, but that's the way it is.
So, can I ask you, what is the ratio of Germans in Canada?
I think pretty high, too. I think almost second to the British. I really believe that. I think it is very high. I remember reading that one time, Carol, and I don't have it right in front of me now. But, yeah, I think it's almost – well, of course, Quebec is French. We can't
– Yeah, that's right.
That French. But, yes, the German heritage is huge in Canada, that's for sure. And anyway, so we decided to set this up. And I could safely become public because my wife had the protection of a union job. She was a very high-up qualified registered nurse. So if I got publicity and couldn't get work or whatever, but I did manage a security guard or whatever. And so we had a family, and I started broadcasting.
All right, now you are starting what you call the British People's League. With your wife,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, and you already had some children.
I had a previous family, and then we had a child just started up. So 75.
So you had your hands full, but she was she had a really good job, secure, yes. And so you were depending on that. So often there's the woman. So often the women like that who are really turned on by all this will do that and have done that, so their husbands can be more active.
Yeah, good
great.
For you.
That's
saying
a great
that.
Story. Great.
Oh yeah, she was a saint. I'm actually writing a book if I ever get it out, and her picture is going to go on the cover. But anyway, so you know what? Let's get down to. I'm sure your listeners want to hear some serious politics. So we held a couple of meetings along Danforth Avenue, and not much of a turnout. But one turnout, there was a group called the Canada Party. So they decided they'd all come and check it out. What they didn't count on was CTV National News following them in. And they put that, they knew we were onto something with this British People's League idea. So the camera went around the room. Well, then of course my past, which we're getting into the second hour. We'll save the exciting part for the second hour. But my past in a park raving my guts out it scared all these people, just totally scared them off. But even today, jumping right up to today, when I sort of think, you know, we're not really growing fast enough. One of the local kids drove by in his truck with a buddy yesterday as I was coming back checking the mail. And I yelled out, "What are you smiling at?" And he let out on the main street, he hollers out, "I'm smiling at the British People's League." I said, "You've just won $1,000. But I get this. Yeah, I had a customer in this morning. He never admitted to me that he had seen the publicity 2 years ago. I was trying to have a party. But I'm jumping all over the chessboard here as usual.
Yeah, this the people who were shocked about you and what they've learned about you at this meeting were the people in the Canada Party or the press people who followed them?
No, the people who are in the Canada Party, because the press knew that we were onto something here. We were tuning into the British roots of British Canadians.
Canada Party is a nationalist party, or was a nationalist party?
Yes,
sort
but
of, maybe.
It never took hold. You got to have somebody that is a go-getter on fire, like Nick Griffin did good with the British National Party. I'll tie that in with getting along with all nationalities. I explained to you on the phone earlier this week. Griffin being a member of the European Parliament over there, two of them, they discovered that the left-wing branches in the European Parliament were financed to have get-togethers. So bingo, the right-wing did it, and it drove the European Union budget chiefs insane, but they couldn't stop it. So there was the Hungarian Nationalist Party and Croatia, and all of the Europeans getting together for their specific roots. No antagonism amongst each other. They met, I believe it was in Brighton very recently. And that's the whole idea. Like you and I talking today, you're very proud of your German heritage as I am of my British heritage. And I'm proud that we're friends. That's the way it should be. So the British People's League, in all of my 20-minute broadcasts on Sundays, I stress the British People's League with our European cousins. Because we've got to all work together against this white genocide. So then, we had a few meetings. It wasn't growing by leaps and bounds. somebody in a higher up connection pretty well passed it through Hazel Lee. There was some people out there who used Hazel, my ex. Well, she died of cancer. But they used her as the go-between. And they said, no, John should put his name in to run for mayor of the city just to test the waters. I said, well, that's crazy. I'll get smeared. Well, it was kind of cute. It was 1975, and they put it in as the British People's League candidate, whatever. And there were about 6 to 8 running, and, you know, the big shots are always first. So.
And you were a candidate then, right?
Yes, but okay, I spent $10. $10, and I got 1,000 votes for $10. And they printed all the smears, former Nazi leader, former Nazi this, that, and the other. And then they actually named a couple of Anglo neighborhoods where Beatty got votes. And they were shocked. And that's just a way back, just to show you that I was testing the waters. A couple of other people in the know had said I was finished because of my 6 years, 1965 to 1971. I was finished. But no, I wasn't finished.
Good for you. What were you running for?
Mayor of Toronto. So they had two strings of candidates, 3 big shots. And then so Beatty came first of the offbeat candidates. But $10, I went to 1 or 2 meetings. I was well received. But it's not my route, Caroline. At this day and age, 2012, I want to see German Canadians, German Americans, British Canadians, British or French Canadians, you name it. We've all got to, well, sure, keep your identity, but let's work together. And I don't want to dwell on the past when we have our meetings. So the British People's League, we have meetings, but at apartments and in homes. Like, the best of luck to them this very day, right now as we're speaking, there are speakers near Asheville, Tennessee, at the Stormfront Conference, right now as we're speaking. But I know a young guy went down there. And
yeah,
I
know some people who are there right now. You're right. Yeah. It is going on.
And I don't blame Don Black for saying you got to rent hotel rooms. But it's horrible. I mean, there's a young guy that goes down from Canada. I've got a good young guy in there. And, you know, $100 now for a hotel room for 150 people, it blows my mind. I mean, the average bungalow can squeeze in close to 100 people if you squeeze them into your kitchen, your living room, and it's snugger and it's nicer. And that's what we do. We have our get. Okay. I'm sorry. The British People's League, our attitude is we are at war with those who are trying to crucify our race with a Holocaust against white people. And, you know, giving a dime to the system just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Like talking to the news media, I give Don Black and the other guy I don't like so much, but I give Don Black full credit. He didn't give an interview to the press. We're at war. You don't talk to the enemy when you're at war. That's why I thank you for the opportunity today to speak to your listeners, because we got variations, of course, as to approaches, but we're basically in the same camp. And
okay, well, how do you work these meetings in homes? If you have the meeting in the home, and all the people stay in that home, or you rent a bungalow and put all the people in there to sleep, and then they what?
No, we try and have a monthly meeting in someone's apartment. I think the John Birch Society operated in that scale decades ago, and maybe they still do. But just a meeting, a Saturday night meeting. We had one great guy at work, but then unfortunately he lost the apartment. He moved, not he lost it. And it was above a store. And so, yeah, there was some noise. There was some racket. There was young people. And it just works fantastic. Just meet in a supporter's home. You don't advertise it. There's no leaflets. You don't talk about it. Just word of mouth. We're going to meet at Edna's apartment this month. We're going to meet at Joe's house the following month. Mm-hmm. To hell with it.
How big are these groups, or do you want to say?
Oh, not very big. The most we had.
The idea is to have a lot of different ones in different places.
Yes. The most we probably had was about 65 at that fellow's apartment in Toronto. Oh, the ones we're having now is probably about 25 a month, which gets me into another attitude of the British People's League. We do preach to the choir. We love preaching to the choir because many members of the choir have strayed and we want to bring them back to the choir. There is no time left for educating someone. If they don't know the score by now, look, let's spend our time getting back all those good, solid people who left for various reasons. Maybe they have a family. Maybe they got turned off by somebody, whatever. They're out there. They're educated. They know the score. They know the total score, slight variations, as I say, each group maybe. But they're out there. And if we brought in all of the people that have been through the doors, whether it was in Arlington, Virginia, or whether it was in Toronto, Canada, or London, England, into the different groups, bring them back, our choir would be massive, massive. So we're trying to win back those that have left because they know the score.
Okay, at these meetings and homes and so on. Of course, you know it's fellowship and it's probably some programs going on there. But is there something that beyond that you are trying to accomplish? Do you have a program for people to get engaged in, for the British People's League, or is it just getting the people and reminding them of the importance of racial solidarity and so on?
Well, I like your last bit there. What we're doing basically is showing them that by belonging and coming to our get-togethers, there's no harm done. You don't lose your job because we're not out in the streets advertising it. Now, having said that, on the British People's League webpage, we now have a van plan. We want to try and save the villages, so we do want to perhaps picket the small villages. This is our active plan, but we've got to have a few vans lined up. The plan, Caroline, is to pick at the post offices because the post offices are the symbol of the federal government and on the public sidewalk, and simply keep our villages majority white. We'll put majority white on there so that your local convenience store run by a third worlder can't go screaming that he feels threatened that we're going to run him out of town. But the villages is the place to recruit because they're the last vestige. And from what I hear about Montana, it's fantastic the way the gathering's going out there. So,
you keep your finger on really well. You mentioned quite a few things going on that I
everything. I listen to Don Black every morning. I keep track of all the websites, the whole bit, and I comment as much as possible, and I believe there'll be a few listeners from Britain today. I comment on their pages, and they're very polite, and I like to make my message succinct and to the point. Whether it's the tram lady over in Britain that's been thrown in the slammer, she's out on bail now, Emma West, she exploded on the subway system there that, hey, I'm the only white person on this train. What the hell? You people aren't English. The whole bit, she got charged. But she is becoming a real heroine over there. So
what is her status now? You just said she got out of jail.
She's out on bail. They're still at her. They're examining more medical reports to see if she's off her rocker or whatever. In the meantime, there's coloreds screaming out in the buses and everything. Well, you know the score.
Yeah, it's awful. Well, they haven't taken her child away from her, or did they?
No.
She's still got it. Okay.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. So
you think she's got a lot of support, though?
Oh, big time, big time. She, throughout history, there's always a small incident that'll turn things. And I think Emma West is the deal that'll turn things in Britain. But I say turn things, like the British People's League. That's the other reason we just like to have get-togethers in private homes, etc. Because as Dr. Pierce put it so well, implosion everywhere. The quality is just going down the tubes everywhere. So we just sit back and gather our people. And we can't wait forever. But the collapse is coming, and we see it all around us. And the more it comes, the more we'll grow. But if we just have a few right now of quality, that's fine. It's just a matter of time.
Quality is important. Can you address infiltration into your meetings and your
group? Yeah, that, well, you know, the old standby. I mean, the minute somebody starts talking about guns or illegalities, you just simply get rid of them. And I spend a lot of time with phony emails. And what they want to do is link me with the open national socialist groups so they can continue saying, well, Beattie's a Nazi. We don't want to be Nazis, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. All the time I get it. So I just ignore them. That's how I get around that. I sometimes think that I'm dreaming, but then, like I say, that kid yelling out of the truck window yesterday in the main street of the village reinforces that we're getting places. Or the customer this morning who said he read the smears.
Hearing from people is so important. Otherwise, you do wonder if you're just talking to yourself, or of course do you have other people involved with you in the British People's League?
Yes, but I can't name them because they would lose. I'm not going to say they'd lose their jobs, but at the core, we've got about a dozen. I call them the dirty dozen, and it revolves. So if two or three drop out. Now, we had a dozen of us at the county fair wearing BritishPeoplesLeague.com t-shirts 2 years ago. Then one of the fellows is going to allow us to have 200 acres, his 200 acres, to have a rally on. Well, the news media went nuts. This is just in the spring of 2011. Headline, you know, British People's League going to have a white rally, White Pride Day. And the news media went nuts. And then the police illegally, two cops approached the landowner, and he had had problems before, maybe impaired driver or something. He got mouthy, and he was beat up in the system. And they just said, well, we know you and we know Beattie. And they scared the hell out of him, so he withdrew the invitation. And so the Dirty Dozen have sort of been laying low, but they're still there. But still, we did make the public appearances at the county fairs and so on. The publicity smears went coast to coast. One major radio station in Toronto, CFRB, gave a very fair broadcast. It was as fair as can be. These two talk show hosts said the police and politicians should stay out of it. On private property, the British People's League has a right to have their rally. Well, they stopped us. But the reason, Carolyn, we had a successful rally in the cottage country area of Haliburton County in 1989. We had 167. My wife counted them all two or three times. I laughed. How did you know that? For three solid days, the police camped out front, protesters screaming. Not one arrest, not one single arrest. And yes, there were a few skinheads. And again, gullible, naive Beattie. I didn't have a clue, really, the skinhead movement. I just thought it was some young kids who liked band music. A New York band pulled up for that rally in 1989, and they couldn't find us at 3 a.m. in the morning. The cops told them where to find us. They went to the police station. And the cops, you know why? Because they had video cameras taking every license plate. But so they thought we were going to repeat this on 200 acres. And now the exaggerations are terrific. The word's out there that Beattie had 500 acres. Before we're done, we'll have had 1,000 acres. But that leads me to another thing here. I think psychologically we're doing great, especially you. I take my hat off to you with the bit of turmoil you've had with your talk show and your networking, blah, blah, blah. Psychological is everything. We don't need many to create the psychology. How many does it take to run a rock and roll concert? Those massive concerts where they had 50,000 kids screaming and yelling. Maybe 5 advanced men. We don't need many in our cities to know the score. And when things get worse, we'll be ready. And then just get off this little rant. And as far as saying, oh, it's hopeless, 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 baloney. All throughout history when the white man got mad, things move quick. And those that don't want to leave, you know, multi-cult types that are smothering us to death, well, we put the Indians on reservations, and there's lots of room for more reservations. I don't care how it's done. The white man will win. Throughout history, they can't touch us for brain power in the third world. Not a prayer. Look at the space program. So that's that rant. I'll calm down and let you speak now, ma'am.
Well, I just wanted to ask you then to give your views on the Canadian government and comparing it maybe, if this makes any sense, to the United Kingdom government and the American U.S. government and, you know, what these governments how would you describe the government in Canada?
Well,
as the enemy?
No. I took a deep, deep breath. On the Israel situation, of course, your listeners are going to say it's the same old, same old, same old, same old. But I'm just going to talk about the positive. Now, regardless of the royal family now, whatever, Queen Elizabeth I kicked all the black Moors out of Britain. It's a monarchy. Okay, it's sort of pie in the sky. But the fact that Harper, the Prime Minister, brought back royal into the Royal, now it's Royal Canadian Navy again, Royal Canadian Air Force. The Liberals went berserk. When they changed our flag in 1965, they tore out the roots of British Canadians. It had the Union Jack, and that's the way we are up here. Now, the bombshell. Harper appointed 100 judges in his first year with a majority government within the last year or two. 100 new judges. And the press are screaming for blood. Out of 100 white judges, only 3 were not white, and they're Native Indian, like, you know, born in Canada type of thing.
Okay.
And they're screaming. The Asians Lawyers Association had big meetings, and they're screaming, why wasn't an Asian lawyer appointed as a judge? So he's brought back royal to give us roots. Just I'll compare it to when the Soviet Union collapsed. Within a month of the Soviet Union collapse, the Russian people brought back the red, white, and blue from 100 years earlier. 100 years earlier. Mm-hmm. They brought back the flag of their roots.
Harper, well, I'll tell you, I believe the German people, if they got rid of that government they've got in, you know, that federal republic, they would bring back an older flag, too.
For sure.
These people don't forget this very. It takes a long time. They haven't forgotten it at all. And just like you say,
with the same language. Yeah. Exactly. And then what else? Okay, the 100 judges.
So Harper's done, you think, some good things. It's just on Israel and the Jewish question that many people are concerned about.
Yeah, it's the usual.
But
I tried to think of this before the show today. How am I going to get around this? Now, look, they put on the Muslim hat when they want the Muslim vote, the Jew bit when they want the Jewish vote. They're politicians. And the other thing I was going to get at Harper, his whole power base is what the British People's League talks about, the villages. Harper has his votes from the villages and Alberta. He has Alberta oil money. And I'm afraid I'm an oddball. You know, this is where I'll turn people off because – you know, I'm sorry. The banking system in Canada is not controlled by the Jewish Empire. The banking system in Canada, they're all Scottish, ancient Scottish. I'm not trying to rave about Scottish. I just, you know, reality's reality. Check it up on board of directors of all our banks. And they're not under the tentacles. I'm sorry. They just aren't. We're tied in economically, but no, this guy, I would say he's a plus, except for the usual crap on Israel. But by the way, there's only 4 Jewish members in Parliament in Ottawa. 4 out of 300, and I forget how many seats, something like the days of the year, 365 days, 302 seats or something. There's only 4 who are Jewish.
You think there's crypto Jews? How about that? I mean, you think there's, or has that been examined and
crypto, yeah, but... But he wouldn't have been – there isn't a Jew in Canada would have allowed Harper to bring back royal. And they did it overnight, just bang, bang. It is now royal again. They don't control Canada. That's my opinion. But other people have studied the matter carefully. Well, fine. But as far as I'm concerned, Harper's – oh, I don't know. He'd be to the right of George Bush and Ronald Reagan. He's not the best there is, but my God, he's pushing the old flag, the red ensign, and all the things that British Canadian wants, he's touching the buttons because he knows, just as the Republican Party in your country is, you know, it's the last hope, but it isn't a hope, but, you know, for white people.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So he knows that with the villages up here. But, Britain, I mean, that's pathetic, calling it a conservative government, and they're all, it's just an invasion in Britain, a total, complete invasion. Civil War has already started. I mean, they're grabbing white people here and there and everywhere, but it'll all boomerang. You're going to have crazy people frustrated who, like that Sikh temple guy, you're going to have people go off the deep end. They're not going to take it forever, and it's all there is to it.
Yeah, well, okay, Britain, you say, so, you know, we know that, speaking about the Jewish element, we know that Britain has absorbed a lot of Jewish people and at high levels, a lot of intermarriage. There's a lot of people with titles and important titles and, you know, lords and so on in Britain that are Jews. And then there's a lot that married into. And so they've really taken control. I think, wouldn't you say that the Jews were in control of the banking in Britain, which is more important than the banking in Canada? But but you're saying that Canada, in spite of it, looks like it's turned into a communist country for wanting to get all these hate laws and so on. But it might be turning around now. Yeah,
Harper,
it might be.
Oh, yeah, Harper just knocked one off the books. Now, I ask you, if he's under control of the you-know-whos, how could he dare to knock Section 13, telephone? Yeah. And I know a lot about it because I was used to get these laws all in. I used to feed stuff to old John Ross Taylor, and he'd go put it on his broadcast machine, and he got charged directly after leaving my place. But I wasn't a willing stooge of the empire. I was just a crap disturber. That we'll get in the second hour. But no, Harper's knocked that off the books. The Jewish spokesman Kotler from Montreal, they went berserk. They were screaming, and the socialists up here called the NDP. And the Calgary men that put Harper in power, they're Anglo-Saxons, and they said, no, this law is crazy. And now they're going after the big hate law. But again, I don't want to miss giving credit to one man who started all of it, a French-Canadian descent, Mark Lemire. He alone, he was charged, he was crucified under this stupid Section 13 for saying the wrong words. And he fought back and fought back and fought back, and he finally got a woman lawyer who helped him, and he pursued it long enough that finally a Conservative member of Parliament put it in as a private bill, and then the federal government of Canada, Harper's government, said, no, we'll take this. We'll go for it. We want this voted off the books. So there's too many things up here with this Harper guy that are pretty damn good. I know somebody will say, yeah, but he did this for Israel, he did that. Yes, I can't argue about that. I'm lost on that. Absolutely. There's nothing I can say about that. But the British People's League, where I would like to think that our pressure group is pressuring Conservatives into doing things our way. That's my hope there, in any case.
Okay, so I've got a couple questions from listeners I'm going to ask you. But before that, so then how do you rate the United States government? You have a difference between the Canadians and the United Kingdom, how well the politicians are doing there, how trustworthy they are. But what about the U.S.? Is it better or worse than Canada, in your opinion?
It's far worse. But there's still the odd shining light down there. That the other radio program, Political Cesspool, they had on a sitting senator or some guy last week who had guts enough to go on.
Congressman.
Yeah, yeah.
A congressman from a representative from North Carolina. So, you know, there's a lot of representatives in every state. So that's kind of like the members of parliament, you know, it's just one. But that's right.
Then you got the sheriffs.
You got one out of, 400 and some.
Yeah, but then you got the Sheriff's Association, that I think was his name, Mac or something.
Yeah, Richard Mac.
He's running. So there's that's the hope. And then Montana, you've got that April Getty lady.
She's been around for a long time, and I don't know what she's done.
They've sold the seeds up in Montana, though. They even drew that minister, and they're gathering there. They really are, from what I see. But in answer to your question, sure, the overall picture looks bad, but on the other hand, the people are in different groups, whether you like them or agree or not. There's groups all over the place. And, you know, the white people are going to win. It's just there's going to be a few more outbursts like that guy that lost control of himself when in the Sikh temple. There's going to be many more instances where people go off the deep end. I don't know of it. I don't know of anything planned out there if anybody's listening in. I'm just saying that it's obvious, human nature. You can't deny people our heritage and squash us like dogs and not expect to be bitten. And the white man is going to rebel.
Okay. Well, we hope so. Here's a question, two questions from David. Okay. He has a British name, his last name, but I won't give it. He's asking you, what is the British People's League doing to spread its message across the old white British dominions? I'm not even sure what that is.
Well, it's really working good, David. Through a young lad, 90 years old, a retired justice of the peace named Nick Main, if you click him in Google. He reproduces our messages. There's two ways we operate. We've got our open British People's League webpage for the public. But for people that are in with us solid, we have a blind list. So sometimes we'll send a copy of the blind list to Nick Main. He'll reproduce it, and it is read around the globe by the old white Commonwealth, Australia, even the Falklands, New Zealand, Australia, Carolyn. So that old British connection, Carolyn, is there. And in answer to David's question, Nick Main reproduces all of it for us. We post on British.
I've seen Nick Main's name. What's he associated? Is there a group that can be named that he has?
No, he's just an information service. But his core bulletins go out to the old white Commonwealth from the old British days a century ago. And those that are still got their British root connection, like Australia, where he's based. But he sends his bulletin out to members of parliament in Britain and around the old white Commonwealth. And we also post on British Resistance. And I post on there personally quite often and post on as many boards to give encouragement to the different groups in Britain, as many groups as possible. And why would we call it British People's League based in Canada? Well, there's one group in Britain that agrees with Beattie's stance here, and that's the Candor magazine, and it's on our webpage. The only link we have on the webpage, because he agrees with our stance that let's bring back those old British stock people together and work together. Within one nation, we can't do it alone. We've got to work together, including with our German-American friends.
Okay. Question number two from David. How can white nationalism break the unfortunate tendency to squabble among the various groups? It often appears that the groups hate each other more than they hate the forces destroying white culture. How can we attain some unity, even if 100% agreement is impossible?
Great question. That's the real core question. And I thought about that before coming on the show today. One word.
Well, you kind of already addressed it, I think, unless you're going to say something different now.
I just wanted to polish it up in a more general way with one word called excitement. When we create excitement, I hate to say entertainment, but when we create self-confidence and white unity, as John Gerhard worked so hard for in Columbus, Ohio in the 70s, it can be done, David. It can be done. I'm guilty too of nitpicking at certain personalities I don't get along with or vice versa. But the overall picture is throughout history, our race has created wonders. And this temporary, when did it start? 1965. So for 50 years, we've had a problem. We'll straighten it out. We'll all get together. And it's not a dream. We just overlook, or the old song, accent the positive, deflate the negative.
Okay, I would like to say that I think this idea that we addressed this earlier, that we should present unity, that we shouldn't that the tendency to squabble among various groups is unfortunate. I think it's unrealistic to expect that there's not going to be squabbling among various groups, and I think it also can be healthy if it's sincere and serious. Not just, on a low level, but if I think that in order to keep our standards up, we have to be critical. We have to disagree. We have to talk out our disagreements. We have to let people have a right to make their own judgments about issues that people are disagreeing about. So I don't think it's reasonable. And here you say that, well, we have to see, he's talking about white nationalism. And you have kind of said that, well, you can't function from that idea that there's a white nation or white nationalism, that we all have our personal, we all have our European roots in one nation or another. And so I have tended to think that, yeah. But how do you can't cooperate? You think that to cooperate, we should just never criticize one another or never.
I get your point. I guess to clarify, we could never work under one umbrella, all singing from the exact same choir sheet, but there can be different sections of the choir working together as best we can, and then leaving certain things to the German-American or as Nick Griffin has proven with the get-togethers in the European Parliament of the nationalist groups. Although I personally don't like the word nationalist. I don't know why. I like the word patriot. To me, I don't know the difference, but I'm just more comfortable with the word patriot.
Oh, but well, I like nationalist, but patriot makes sense to me too. There's nothing wrong with that word if it's used right. But here's the thing that here's just an example. Now, British National Party, Nick Griffin said that they wanted to bring back the polish up the image of Churchill or use Churchill in the British National Party as a symbol or as a hero of Britain, because we needed British people needed their heroes. Now, this is not something that what I'd call the true Germans, and the nationalists of Germany, could ever join in with to honor Churchill. I mean, in fact, it's repulsive. But of course, I've said that the British people, if they have a right to do that if they want. And that's why I also can't go along with this. I can't think that it can succeed, this that we all become white nationalists, or we all just become European. You know, like in Europe, they should all be Europeans. And, you know, there's not enough power. There's not enough soul feeling, like you're talking about the excitement. There's not enough caring when you put it on a level like that. You know, because it doesn't deal with your true roots. So I won't go on and on about that. But I do think
I agree. Yeah. Like I said earlier, that's why the all-encompassing approach won't work. But by the same token, we can get together. I don't know how the bloody modern politicians do it, but there is a way that certain topics we just leave for casual discussions on the side. But the basic one of your posters, I believe, put it on in the last few weeks. The bottom line is the 14 words. As long as we agree with those 14 words.
But it's going to be that there's a difference in how you what you think will bring that about. You see,
that's true.
You can have real differences, and I don't think there's any way. I just want to say to David that I don't think there's any way that we can stop squabbling. And there was squabbling in the National Socialist Party in Germany all the time among top people, and yet, you know, they all supposedly, pretty much, you know, they were traitors, but, you know, followed what the decision was. But they had tremendous rivalries. They hated each other, some of them, you know, and so there's no way you're going to get rid of that. But so we shouldn't expect it. And there's a lot of people who get upset as soon as one group says something to or about another, and they don't think it should happen. So I don't know. That's just my own. I'm just maybe a I don't want to have to stop squabbling, but that would just be my answer to him. So we've got, if you want to say anything more about that, go ahead, and then I'll go to the next question.
Well, just to top it off, I guess I would be halfway in between David's question, the innuendo in his question, and your answer. I'm optimistic that we can have our own heroes and just not shove our own heroes down each other's throats, but the 14 words, and we must at least try to work together on some level. Maybe it won't be in total unity, but at least a bit.
Okay, well, sure, and we sure don't want to be fighting in the sense of war or, you know, serious fighting. say in Europe amongst the various nations and so on, we should have learned from the past and not do that. So we have to find that way to be separate but respectful, and to see ourselves as one people overall, and to hold together. We now clearly have an outer enemy, whereas before we didn't see an outer enemy. We just had each other as enemies in Europe. You know, but now we see that, you know, the outer enemy has shown up and is taking over. And so now we can kind of regroup and see it differently, that we have to join together to fight this this alien. And even in Canada, in the United States, it's true, too. We have the aliens among us. So,
yeah.
All right. Tom writes, kind of a casual question here. What's going on with that troublemaking fool? I think his name is Warmus. He means Warman, I guess.
Yes. Yes. Well, since Mark Lemire, the hero of the white right in Canada, pretty well, like I said a short while ago, caused the downfall and the death of Section 13, Warman is out of a few lucrative bucks by suing everyone. I have to be careful here, my day job, but he tried his best to get me stripped of my ability to have my job. My employers have just simply made it clear that I must not embarrass my day job, I'll put it that way. But Warman is everywhere. I never thought I would be the recipient too. So he's a lawyer, Carolyn, that is well known in Canada. He used to be able to grab everything he could on websites. If you just, I was named because I dared to put in a web form somewhere. I called somebody as, I think I called your president a spook. Well, now you're allowed to do that again on the web pages in Canada. That Section 13 was a horror. And in the second hour, I'll get to how I helped pass it, because the boogeyman image they created of yours truly. But anyway, Warman is just, he's toast. There's nothing he can do now. There's a conservative blog up here, folks, you listeners, called Free Dominion. You can check into it. They've really fought with Warman, and they're conservative. They're not even, you know, they're not white racist, and they've really fought Warman tooth and nail, Caroline. This guy was equivalent to the guy Morris Dees. He's the Morris Dees of Canada, this mm-hmm. character. Yeah, exactly the same setup. You know, make money off of poor persecuted patriots.
Right. And now the thing, though, about this Warman is that he was shown to have done a lot of illegal, I guess they're not illegal, but a lot of dirty things in order to prosecute people. But I guess it's not sure. really prosecuting, because it was this it was a kind of a human rights tribunal. It wasn't the courts, the actual courts of Canada, but they were able to punish people very badly, give them big fines and so on, and publicize them in ways that harmed them.
You got it. You've done your research. Yeah.
Yes. Well, we've all been very well inundated with that Section 13 here in the U.S. By Canadians who have, you know, brought the news to us. And so we were all concerned about that. And a lot of non-Canadians worked very hard exposing all that and talking about it, like Arthur Topham. Oh, no, he is in Canada. That's right. He is in British Columbia. Okay. But Warman, you know, he never got any punishment for that. And that's the thing with the Jewish people. When they do this stuff, they might get stopped, you know, by the truth eventually, but they are never punished. Same way with these Holocaust, fake Holocaust survivors and all kinds of Holocaust stuff that goes on. But, you know, they might be proven to be liars, to be wrong, to be damaging people. But nothing's done to them.
I think the Jewish community in Canada, I'll put that in diplomatic words, they had a big town hall meeting, and Warman was the guest speaker, and they booed him. I think he's despised by the Jewish community now, because they figure he brought down Section 13 because he was so obnoxious, so hateful, so spiteful, and he just turned off the public. And I think he's friendless right now.
Oh, that's interesting, and that's good to know because, you know, this is what happens at least by some of them. Yeah, they will go too far, and so many people say that they go too far, and when they do, then they lose everything that they gained. They lost that. That is a great victory, and you know, it seemed like such a terrible thing, and then when it's gone, it's like everybody just sort of forgets about it. You know, we don't really congratulate ourselves or congratulate the people who were responsible for it, but you did on this program, Mark Lemire. And let me just ask you, Paul Frohm has gotten into that a lot, but people have said to me that he's kind of taking credit for things that he didn't do. Do you have any comment?
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, I mean, like David was saying, you know, the nitpicking part's bad, but as you said, I'm playing both ends here. What a politician I'm turning out to be. But as you said, we have to, you know, point out this truth. But yes, I've heard from several people. How can I put it? You know, he travels around. He likes the spotlight, and at least somebody, I suppose, is doing it that way. So I can't stand the man personally, but I give credit where it's due. I mean, he does take the physical risk by going and speaking out. Yeah. But where I don't give forgiveness is from now on, we cannot talk to the enemy press. Now, Don Black, to do with this thing they're having today, this conference, he did not talk to the public press. He refused to, but Frohm did. But there has to be certain lines.
Go ahead.
We're at war. And we have to.
Well, I agree. I love that. I love that phrase. We're at war. All right. We're at the end of our first hour. This is the Green Fields of France by the Furious. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in 5 minutes.
Well, how do you do, young Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside and rest for a while? Need the warm summer sun. I've been walking all day and I'm nearly done. I see by your gravestone you are only 19 when you joined the Great Fallen in 1916. I hope you died well and I hope you died clean. Our young Willie McBride was it slow and obscene. The deep beat, the drums slowly did they play, the fife slowly did they sound, the death march as they lowered you down. And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? Did you leave it a wife or a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory enshrined. Although you died back in 1916, in that faithful heart are you forever 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name, enclosed and forever behind the glass frame, in an old photograph torn, battered and stained, and faded to yellow in the brown leather frame? Did he beat the drum slowly, did he play the fine slowly, did I sound the death march as he lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? And did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? The sun, now it shines on the green fields of France. There's a warm summer breeze, it makes the red poppies dance. And look how the sun shines from under the clothes. There's no gas, no barbed wire, there's no gun firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses stand mute in the sand. To man's blind indifference, to his fellow man, to all generation that were butchered and damned. Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did they sound the death march as he lowered you down? And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the fall? My young Willie, my bride, I can't help wonder why. To those that lie here, know why did they die? And did they believe when they answered the call? Did they really believe that this war would end wars? Well, the sorrow, the suffering, the glory, the pain, the killing and dying were all done in vain. For young Willie McBride, it all happened again, and again and again and again and again. Today beat the drums.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am Carolyn Yeager, and this is Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. This is our second hour, our final hour of today's program, coming live from the White Network. And my guest is John Beattie. And things are really heating up here, John. It's getting very interesting. And I'm going to skip that comment by that I read to you before the show by the woman Mary, because we've really dealt with that sufficiently. So let's go into your interesting past now. I'm looking forward to hearing you set the record straight about how all this came down and what part you played.
Okay. Well, first off, it would have to be fate, Caroline, and your listeners. It would have to be fate, F-A-T-E, because, I was raised in a very narrow Anglican atmosphere. The family sent me out to church to pray for all their sins while they stayed at home, whatever. But it ties in, the strict atmosphere. I wasn't, brutalized or anything like that. I just meant very strict atmosphere, raised very, very strict belief in God, etc. And it was so quiet in our part of the city. So when, as I said in the earlier part of the show, when everything was going haywire in Canada, I crossed the border back and I thought I was in heaven again after I felt what was going to happen in the States. So that's fine. So when I was going to this German Harmony Club Friday nights to dances and different things, and because it was so much of a pleasure compared to rock and roll dances. It ties in. It does, believe me. One night I missed my bus to get down to the Harmony Club. I thought, the hell with this. I don't care, even though I'm 20 years old. I'll stick my thumb out. So a guy pulls over, a little Volkswagen or whatever. And as we're driving down, he said, I could take you down that far, sure. And he was questioning me. Now, when I was in the Air Force for 5 years, I was cleared secret. I did the daily routine orders for Air Defense Command in Quebec, St. Hubert, Quebec. So I knew a lot about subversive activities in Canada, a lot more than I'm saying today. But anyway, so this guy was questioning me. He said, you're different. Why? And he had a Baltic accent. Now, how I knew the accents, the part I was raised in Toronto, people had escaped from communism, one Latvian family in a wheelbarrow, for God's sake, over barbed wire. So I went to school with Baltics, Estonians, Lithuanians, Latvians who had escaped. Okay, so I detected an accent. And I thought, what's this guy asking me these questions for? He said, why do you want to go down there to a dance? I told him I couldn't stand the modern world. I said, it's not the world. I said, everything's going crazy. So just before I got out of the car, now, if I'd never met that guy, I wouldn't be talking to you today. I'd be like my lawyer brother out west in Alberta, money, 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 and to hell with the world. But that that damn guy, I don't know if he helped me or not. As I'm getting out of the car, he hands me a leaflet called the Canadian Intelligence Service. Well, I'd never heard of it through my Air Force days. Written by Ron Gostick out of Flesher, Ontario. Some of your listeners might have known of his history. Very decent guy. And it was quoting the Oklahoma Tribune editorial, "Who is tampering with the soul of America?" So I read this thing. I went nuts. I don't know why. I had to read this out. I went to work the next day. I thought, well, if any of the political parties existing today are any damn good, none of these conditions would exist that I'm getting worried about. Immigration starting, our flags being changed by a bunch of weirdos and Pierre Trudeau, blah, blah, blah. So I went through the phone book, and I remembered a group called Social Credit. One day I played hooky watching TV at home, and I remember these guys in business suits. I thought, well, hell, I'll give them a call. Little old lady answers, "Oh, yes, dear, we meet tonight, as a matter of fact."
If it was this a party? Was this a party? Yes. Was it called Social Credit Party?
Okay. Yes, and they had members, and there was quite a movement. They had sitting members in Parliament for years, Caroline, in Alberta and in British Columbia. And actually, damn it all, they helped get the new flag in that I can't stand, Réal Caouet in Quebec, and yet I got to know him personally. So I walked in to this hall. I was pretty good at public speaking in high school, big deal, you know. But why did I want to read it out? I don't know. That's the unexplainable. I guess we'll need 25 shrinks to figure that out. So I said, there was about 30 people, all seniors, and I said, "Listen, I want to read this thing out." "Oh, sure, boy, go ahead." Well, there was like a gang of vultures waiting. There were people from the Canadian Jewish Congress. They admitted they were with the Canadian Jewish Congress, sitting in that hall just like waiting for somebody like me. They wanted a hate law in Canada so they could continue with subversion or whatever. These guys admitted it. Ron Botero, I'll name three of them, Ron Botero, Christopher Dingle, and John Dingle. They admitted it on the Don Sims radio show that they were there to help expose a Nazi party, which they created. And they bragged about it on this show. Also at that hall, it was a very busy part of Toronto, Caroline and your listeners, 902 Yonge Street. And I couldn't understand how come this fancy building, I didn't know much about Social Credit. It was a stamp and coin dealer named Neil Carmichael. He was respected. So anyway, they're gathered there. I'm reading this thing out. And who is tampering with the soul of America? And if Johnny can't read by the time he's through school, why? And if they call art art and the whole wall looks like it's out of a fertilizer, why do they call it art? And I'm going and I'm reading this and it's so they have done this to us. They. And like I've said this in the past, but I love this part for myself. It's like the soothsayer in The Merchant of Venice. And the guy, or was it Julius Caesar? Excuse me. Calls out from the mob, "Beware of the Ides of March." Well, that's what this guy reminded me of in the back row of the hall. He says, "You know who they is." Now, don't ask me why, but the word Jew hit my brain like lightning. Really? I spent summers amongst farmers, and they would, you know, they talk about you were Jew down this side or the other. But here's where I don't understand myself. I was in the Royal Canadian Air Force. My family were British. My grandmother lost relatives in the war like your followers lost their relatives. It was horrible. I had no conscience. It just seemed like I just stepped into a new world. And loving the publicity or whatever, it was a ride from there on in. They were running candidates. But guess who walks in to that building? Art Eagleton. Oh, I can name him freely. He can't deny it. He was the mayor of Toronto for years. At that point, he was just like me, a young guy, early 20s. Why was he in that building? He became the mayor of Toronto. Now he's a senator in Ottawa. He's had women troubles, but he's up there groveling. His nickname was Eggs. But why was he coming into that building?
Eggleton was his name, huh? E-G-G-L-E-T-O-N.
Eggleton. He was the mayor of Toronto later on. So try and get to the point. So from the minute of walking into that hall, just imagine if that guy had handed me that pamphlet. Now, before I get off that Canadian Intelligence Service, I got to say this. Later on, when I was getting headlines, Ron Gostick on that same paper, they were the only ones that said John Beattie is being suckered to get a hate law passed in Canada. And I had been told about it, and I didn't believe them. But I wasn't thinking of anything, and I'll never understand why to this day. Maybe the free beer. I had a beer problem. Most people drink beer, Caroline, from a glass. I used to go into beer parlors and drink it by the pitcher. I'm not proud of it, but I love the stuff.
So did you drink hard liquor, too? You always say you had a beer problem. But it was a beer. Gee, you would look like you were a fit young guy, but I guess you could really hold a lot of beer in those days, a lot of young guys.
It was ridiculous. I don't know, but they poured it down my throat.
When did you pick up that beer habit, or did it start then? I mean, when they were...
No, I never had a beer until I was 17. Well, that's a very interesting point. I never thought of it that way. They were pouring it at me, and I can't look. I blame myself. I look in the mirror, free will. I took that at St. Michael's College, philosophy and law, free will. And you have the free will. That's why I'm sorry. I don't go with people in the banking system. You signed on the dotted line. Nobody forced you to sign that damn document. And if we didn't sign for the credit cards and didn't, anyway, I'll get to the other stuff. So here I am getting caught in this whirlpool. So next thing you know, these guys are suggesting, well, we got to have some kind of a new party. There's about 30 there. And these young guys are pushing at me. So we held a separate hotel meeting. And I'll never forget the night I said, well, we could call it Canadian National Party. And Chris Dingle specifically pouring me another beer. Oh, no. We got to have something exciting to appeal to the young people. We should call it the Canadian Nazi Party. I mean, I'll see that image to the day I croak. But why didn't I think of the turmoil I would cause with my own family who had relatives in the war? It never occurred to me the turmoil I would cause or upsetting German Canadians who wanted to get away from all of it. And it never occurred to me at all. Not one iota. That's the mystery of my life. I just dove into it.
Young and drunk.
Well, I got one pal. He said it was the beer, but I don't give myself an excuse. But I'm telling you, were they professional at it? Holy crackers. Then the next step. Those who want to check out the Don Sims radio show with those three names I gave you. But the real bombshell, you look up Google, John Charles Garrity, Maclean's Magazine. That's Canada's national magazine back then. It was anyway. 1966. Headline picture, I spied on the Canadian Nazis. And there's a box I had of newspaper clippings. And any idiot can see it's a banana box. And he's on the front cover of Maclean's Magazine, like as if it was your Newsweek. And Nazi party. He had driven me around. He fed me. I had nothing. And I ended up in the slammer over for 4 months for putting Hindu good luck charms on the very people who employed him, had me drive after dark because I couldn't get a speaking permit in the park to leave the cardboard sign on their doorknobs. The police were a bit on my side when they stopped the car. One cop came running out of the bushes, gun waving. When they stopped the car, they pulled off Garrity's jacket so I could see the bug on his back of his jacket, a big listening device. And my point is, his employers had drove me. His employers knew, well, they couldn't have him driving to another Jew's door who didn't know anything about this stuff because that would be inciting another Jew. It's a very obscure law up here called you may not unlawfully interfere with the lawful enjoyment of private property. Like up here, Caroline, if the Bell Canada comes to your door, they have to clip something to your doorknob, but you can't leave string. The Appeal Court of Ontario said if the string wasn't on the cardboard, I couldn't have been convicted. But that's a small sample. So you could say, why did I go along with it? I don't know. The excitement, the commotion. And I had an old Dutch landlord, a very, very lonely man. His wife had died. And he loved it, too. And we just sat there roaring our guts out. We'd phone up the newspapers and say, well, we're going to blitzkrieg City Hall. We'll leave us tomorrow. There'd be a headline in the Toronto Star, the biggest newspaper in Canada, Nazi blitzkrieg. They actually had the population thinking there was a Nazi party. There was not a Nazi party. Or on the Harry Brown CBC show up here, he said, come on, John, you caused all that trouble in Allen Gardens. I said, Mr. Brown, I was the best Israel bond salesman that ever lived on the planet Earth. And what are you talking about? I said, without the talk of gas ovens and Nazis, do you really think the little Jews like to buy Israel bonds to keep the rabbi fat and lazy? I don't think so. And it never ended. And Well, I'll throw a few things in.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I've go got ahead, some Carol. Questions.
Well, yeah. You know, now you just said that there was no Nazi party, okay? A Wikipedia still says there was a Canadian Nazi party and there was, it turned into the National Socialist Party or the other way around. And it was it lasted from 65 to 78, and that's why they keep saying that you were the head of it all that time.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yes.
And they connected some other people with it. And they've never, they're not saying that it was a fake, although I've read that in other places. So, you're now saying that there really was no organization at all. It was just publicity. It was just speeches.
Me and apart, publicity and the speeches, and there was no Nazi party whatsoever. I told this Harry Brown guy in his show, I said, where have all the Nazis gone? Like the old song, where have all the flowers gone? Show me. There were a couple of straggling guys who come along for curiosity and drink beer and sit around at the park and phone me up at the landlords. And that's where we get into, you were going to ask me about Martin Weech. Well, let's
get
this clear.
How about who was your handler then? Who was the guy then that was running you, taking you around and putting you in these
Geraghty.
Parks? Talks? Geraghty.
Geraghty. And he bragged about it, a huge write-up, massive, page after page, in McLean's Magazine 1966 issue. They figured they were going to get their hate law.
Well, how do you spell his name?
G-A-R-R-I-T-Y. G-A-R-R-I-T-Y. John Charles. But on Google, I think, either way, I guess. So the Canadian Jewish Congress... He sort of squealed on them. I don't think he got as much money as he wanted. He got paid well. And he brags about it in McLean's Magazine. I drove Beattie everywhere. Beattie was careful not to break the law.
Is that article still available?
Oh, yes. It was during the knocking out of Section 13, Mark Lemire reprinted it. And then this Jewish conservative, because you've got some down there, named Ezra Levant has written a book. And he if you look up Ezra, E-Z-R-A, Levant, L-E-V-A-N-T.
Yeah, I'm familiar with him. And
yeah,
what's the title of the article?
Blog page. Well, he just talks about, I guess if you click in his blog page, Geraghty or John Beattie, but he reproduced the whole Geraghty article there. And I know it's on Google somehow.
Okay,
it's there. And page after page where he brags about, I did this for Beattie, I did that. But they did everything at key moments, like winning me the right to subpoena the mayor of Toronto and the chief of police and the deputy chief. So I ended up serving the mayor of Toronto under full TV cameras, the mayor of Toronto, during a board meeting, a board of control meeting, an official meeting. I walk in, walk across the table, I subpoena the mayor of Toronto on Adolf Hitler's birthday. So you can imagine the headlines that made. They always steered me in such a way.
What were your real feelings while you were doing this? Did you just... Did you hate Nazis? Or you were kind of... You didn't have a real opinion. You didn't have a strong opinion of your own, so you just went along with it.
I never stopped for 5 minutes in that whole 6 years to think about what I was doing. The excitement, the commotion, I have no idea.
Well, alcohol can do that. If you are drinking the whole time and you're constantly... you've constantly got alcohol in your blood, you know, or alcohol levels, sort of.
I never had explained like that. At least it might make... Give me a reason, because I sure don't know why. I was not paid a salary. I was not knowingly working for the Jewish Congress. But the beauty is, after Ezra Levant heard this from Mark Lemire, Mark Lemire told him there wasn't a Nazi party. You could talk to Beattie. So Levant wrote up that he was shocked that I would talk to him. And I told him what I've been saying on this show today. So he reprinted it. Then a gal in Winnipeg named Rhonda Spivak, a Jewish paper in Winnipeg, she printed it. She was horrified. It's like there's a miniature civil war going on. She couldn't believe it. Then the Jerusalem Post picked it up. This is just about 2 or 3 years ago. And they printed it. That it was horrifying that the Canadian Jewish Congress created a Nazi party. They went nuts in the Jewish Jerusalem Post. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the Canadian Jewish Congress died. So I had my revenge. They used me, but guess what? They're dead. If you Google Canadian Jewish Congress now, it shows you a new name. I don't know, Israel Friendship Committee or something. But they had to pack it in after that.
Oh, I thought they'd come back. I can hardly believe there's not a Canadian Jewish Congress, because there's every other kind of Jewish Congress.
They got a new name, okay. But they could no longer use that name because they were the little Jew. I'm sorry, I can't believe every little Jew is in on all the political stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of Jews absolutely horrified that an organization they had paid and donated to, without them, there wouldn't have been Beatty and all this crap. And the hate law they had, a big committee meeting in Ottawa paid for an Ottawa hate commission report on John Beatty. I mean, one 24-year-old, and it's so unbelievable, I can't believe it talking to you right now.
Yeah.
But I have the pleasure of knowing that it crucified Canadian Jewish Congress. And the whole story was over one check that I can't. My best friend in life was my old philosopher, landlord, Vanderwit. The Jewish gal in Winnipeg, Jewish News, she said, well, wasn't that building a headquarters of the Nazi party? That's what Rabbi so-and-so said. I said, there was no headquarters. I said, there was a rooming house. I went to the University of Toronto, and I said, I still have a rent check. Because I love the old guy, and that was his signature on that rent check. She said, if you could send me that rent check, we've got a story. And I did. And that rent check proved it was just a rooming house because it said right on there, room rent, and there were other rumors. So anyway, I guess the message to the listeners is don't throw out everything. Keep some things. You never know when they pay off.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Good for you. Well, you know, what is behind this is that the Canadian Jewish Congress had an interest in creating a Nazi threat, and they used you. And it wasn't very hard to put that over on the public because the media went along with them. The media could have easily uncovered some of this, don't you think?
Oh, they knew it was all crap.
Yeah, but they went along with it. So, and the purpose that the Canadian Jewish Congress had at that time was to get this hate law passed that they'd been trying to get, I read, since the 1930s. And didn't finally come about until when did that get passed in Canada?
Oh, about 66, 67.
That early.
Well, it was during Trudeau's era, so 67, 68.
Long time ago. Wow.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as strong then as it has become since, right? Have they added to it?
Well, the other way around, sort of, Caroline. They under the hate law, you have the attorney general of the province has to okay that personally. The attorney general has to okay a charge on the hate law. It's only been two or three or four, not more than half a dozen all those years. The real bad one was the Mark Lemire deal, the Section 13. That was used by the likes of Richard Warman and human rights commissions and commissars across the country. That was the real bad one. Because under the other, you have to preach genocide. We should be charging the other side for preaching genocide against the white race, that's for sure. But it isn't quite as bad. I know it sounds ironic, but you've really got to be inciting hatred and a threat to someone or some identifiable group. If you're going to get rid of a whole group and you preach that, then under the hate law. But Section 13 was the worst, and you know, God bless Mark Lemire for getting rid of it. And also, though, the two Jews, Ezer Levant and Mark Stein, they're conservative Jews, and they were charged for writing articles against Muslims under the Section 13. So, of course, when you ruffle feathers of a Jewish person, that can get you some action quick, too. So they dove in and supported Mark Lemire. Ezer Levant had Mark Lemire on his TV show. And Mark, brave guy that he is, you know.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I sent him a donation once, but I really didn't keep it up because I had so many other interests that to help out. But he is one of those people who make who've really made a big difference, and I imagine he might become more famous as time goes on. I hope so, and get the credit that he deserves. Now, you were going to talk about this, your friend Martin Weicha, or I don't know if he was.
I was just to my lips. I knew you'd bring him up. Okay. He would probably be the only genuine National Socialist that I ever met. Now, that may be not quite true. Look, I don't think Pierce and I don't think Rockwell, down to the core, were what you would call National Socialists. I think both of them hated the system with a passion, and they would use any tool on the planet to get at the system. Now, that's maybe naive of me to say so when Pierce quotes, you know, Hitler so much and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But that's how I felt. But Weech, he was in the Air Force, the Luftwaffe, et cetera. Now, he showed up right when the Jews were done needing me. You know, they were getting their hate law passed, and he was bugging me. And I said, well, I said, you know, I don't think we're going to get anywhere. What's the purpose? And I didn't mind the offer because he was a big landlord back then of a place to stay safe. Because it was hard on my wife. I mean, my first wife's still alive, and I give her a badge of honor for putting up with it. She marched through the park with me once. But anyway, we moved to London at Weech's offering. Well, you know what? A two-story house. He didn't tell us upstairs was rented. I'm sorry. There was the political side of the man. Then there was the personal side, and it was horrible. So anyway, he just took, you know, he took the name, and he was going to build a National Socialist Party. But his personality was so obnoxious that that's why he couldn't build. He genuinely, I wouldn't doubt, wanted a National Socialist Party, but he didn't have any friends. Very, very obnoxious man, and that's all there is to it. And so it was about...
But he sent you to London, huh? And put you up in...
Well,
oh, you're talking about London, Canada, not London.
London, Canada, yeah.
Oh,
London,
okay.
Ontario. Because he had properties there. And his idea was to set me up on a street corner hand out leaflets. So I went along with it one day. He sat in his Cadillac around the corner watching me. Reminds me of Rockwell had an early patron called Aerosmith. Exactly the same thing. But this guy was no patron. Weech just wanted to get rent money out of me. And one time when I was up at Sault Ste. Marie visiting some, you know, people that were half and half, and my wife didn't mind, so I was up there for a few days, he was there screaming at her on the public terrace with an apartment building next door, "Where's the rent? Your husband's buying it." Screaming at my poor wife in broad daylight with three babies. So I had no personal liking for the man. His political beliefs, yes, I believe he believed in National Socialism, but I'm sorry, I couldn't have anything to do with the man. And nobody else did either on a personal level. I think everybody would say he genuinely was a National Socialist, but his personality was just out to lunch.
Well, he was able to make a lot of money, and most of us don't have that ability. We just can't, you know, we can't focus on it that strongly. But he was, so that's probably why he has a personality like that.
But Jews pulled the rug. I sat there while he says, "This is Mr. Beatty. Now you got to give us this mortgage." He was mortgaged to the hilt, and he had to go bankrupt. And he built from scratch. Believe me, his mortgages were all Jewish money. Mm-hmm. I know that for a fact. I sat in on one deal. My eyeballs blinking. But he built up a mini mansion in London, Ontario, renting out rooms and stuff to Chinese or whatever.
Well, could he have avoided dealing with Jewish people for his mortgages? I mean, could he have avoided that, or was that?
Well, I got mine with a bank here. Why couldn't he? Mine's with a bank.
Well, he was with individual Jewish lenders.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, gripes.
They had him by the throat, and they pulled the rug whenever they wanted to, and that's what they did to him.
What about Don Andrews? Don Andrews?
I know. We're born within. Yeah, we're born within one day of each other. Within one day of each other.
Okay.
Yeah, we're born within one day of each other. And I just talked to him on the phone this morning. Today I just found out he nearly died on September 4th.
Oh, he's the one. Yeah, he's the one you were talking about. All right. He started the European Heritage Week. And
yes. That was a great move. It was a great move. But a lot of city officials they messed their pants when they found out a racist organization is behind the European Heritage Week. So they rescinded their, they signed a certificate and agreed with European Heritage Week. Then they found out it was Don Andrews and they had a fit.
Yeah, there you go.
He's done a lot of good. But anyway, I talked to him this morning just to say I'm glad he's still alive. We've had a lot of huge differences, but we still get along. And I admire him for his tenacity. And he's had his webpage going for years.
All right. Now, in the 1990s, also brought along, I'm going to try to find what I've got here. Okay, 2000. In the year 2000, Paul Frome's organization, Canadian Association for Free Expression, was going to do something at a hearing about the Section 13, I believe, and
I walked out.
Yeah, you were supposed. There was a big deal, you know. You were supposed to be testifying there. Canadian Jewish Congress that set you up, and then you didn't show up. It said you never even showed up.
Okay.
What was that?
Okay. What this was for Ernst Zundel.
Yeah. Okay.
Ernst Zundel's lawyer, Barbara Kalatschka, and she's a terrific woman. She's defended a lot of white racial types up in Canada. She's the one that helped Mark Lemire. She really helped him. But
right.
She made a slip at this time. They figured out that if Beattie got up in front of the court and pointed out how he was created by the Canadian Jewish Congress, then that would relate also to Ernst Zundel showing how he was being attacked viciously by these people. And, you know, they set up a Canadian born like John Beattie. When Barbara, I was on a payphone, because she left a voicemail. I gave her a call. She's in Eastern Ontario and a very nice woman. And I said, look, Barbara, I've been through the mill with the German side of things. And I said, and it hurt a lot of German people, too. It hurt, you know, it shook up a lot of people. I don't know about this. I said, but I really liked her. I respected her. And I'm that way. If somebody treats me good, I'll do my best. But I made her promise me one thing. I said, Barbara, here's the deal. I don't want any publicity. She said, well, I'll promise you there won't be any from our side. Well, I knew what she meant. The Toronto Star and all the rags would smear me. But that's what I meant. Because in our circles, people print stuff about you without authority quite often. And I did not want to be used by Paul Frome for him to make money off of me losing another family or having to go on welfare again or whatever. So I made it clear to Barbara, I said, as long as there's no publicity from our side, because she said it first, oh, I promise you there won't be, John. I said, okay, I'll go for it. So the night before the meeting, I had my son as a security guard. He's a great big lad, wore a security shirt. So Frome and Barbara Kalatschka showed up at the fellow, actually, who allowed British People's League meetings. And, you know, just reviewed what I'd be expected to say and so on. But, of course, I had faith that everything would be fine. That night, Paul Frome put the whole deal on his internet broadcast, violating what they promised me they would not do. And the next morning, I saw it on the internet. John Beattie will say this. John Beattie will say that. And that did it. So I went down, and I just stared at them all. And it's a sea of Jews and a sea of this. And I just thought, oh, God, here we go again. And I don't need – my son was mad at me pulling out. He didn't think it looked good. And I didn't have time to explain to him that they violated the word. And years later, when I wanted to ask Barbara Kalatschka a legal question on the telephone, she said she hadn't talked to me since that incident. And then that's in Wikipedia. That incident's right in the Wikipedia story of John Beattie. And then she said to me, John, what you did to Paul back then wasn't very fair, John. She was sort of mad. I said, Barbara, you people promised me there wouldn't be advanced publicity. She said, who told you that? And I said, you did, Barbara. And she shut right up. She forgot.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know if they...
Oh, she believed you. Did she remember then? I mean, you're saying she shut right up. I mean,
She didn't argue with me.
She just had forgotten.
Yeah, but I don't think she realized how much it meant to me
Not
to have our own circles talk. I don't care what the enemy press says about me. I'm proud of it. That means I'm hurting them when they smear me. But I don't want our own people making money. You know, when we had that rally in 1989, we had a big rally. I forbid cameras for one reason. I said, you're not going to go back to the basement of your home and show these films about this rally to your buddies who are too gutless to come. There's one thing I detest is people who sit at home. The fellow that built, we lit a candle for that ceremony at midnight at that rally, the largest cross that's ever been lit in Canada's history. I'm quite proud of it. The fellow that built it, hid it under leaves. The landlord was inspecting, a real Christian fundamentalist, and if he'd found the cross, he would have gone berserk. He didn't find. Here's my point. The fellow that built the cross, he stayed at home in Toronto watching it on television. I detest that, Caroline, when people want to sit back and let us take all the heat and they do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So this thing with this. So this thing with the hearing, you extracted a promise from Barbara Kolaska, and you were serious about it. And she said, "Oh no, absolutely, there won't be any of that." And she didn't hear that as seriously, you know, as you meant it. And she just lost that in between. And so, when you reminded her, she didn't have any comeback for you, she knew
3 or 4 years later.
So that's these kind of misunderstandings that happen that can really cause a lot of trouble.
I really pushed it at her. I told her I don't want to go on welfare again and get smeared and used by everybody. And the fact that she and Fromm came to that fellow's apartment where I was staying the night before with my son, that tipped me off something was up. That's why I searched the internet that morning and found he had already put it on his internet, what I was going to say. I don't care if the Jews say it. I don't want our side saying it. I just don't believe in that.
Okay. Okay, and what was said on Fromm's website, and it's still available, I mean, to read it, he, after a few things, he says, Beatty will reveal... I mean, I always call you Beatty. Beatty will reveal how an agent for the Canadian Jewish Congress lured him into a technical breach of the law, which landed the now unemployed, penniless Nazi leader in prison for 6 months. Well, that's another thing. We'll talk about that in a minute. He said Beatty will also expose the fact that the same agent proposed legal maneuvers that were calculated to frighten and cause distress among Jews, thus heightening the Nazi menace, which was used as an argument for the 1971 hate law section of the criminal code in the subsequent section 13. This was, of course, in 2000. and says John Beatty will also be mentioning the role of a prominent liberal politician in his early political activities in Toronto's far right. So he was saying a lot, which you say you didn't approve of him doing that, but he was trying to make a good show for it.
Oh yes, but he loves putting in the penniless, and he's the only one who'll talk about me being in the slammer unless I want to say it. But I just know his modus operandi. Mm-hmm. He I don't know how to put it. He skirts beside things and then collects donations. He collects the money, but you do the suffering, just like Mark Lemire.
Well, some Canadians actually wrote to me about that, but I said, well, you don't have any proof. They wrote me comments, and I said, I can't post this because, you know, it's just what you say, and they didn't. But
I know.
I realized that there is a lot of people in Canada who feel that way, and then there's a lot who think he's great. So we'll leave that here. Would you say anything about that prison thing, or is that something you don't like to bring up because of your current activities?
Oh no, that was the deal where I was telling you about Garrity with Hindu good luck charms with because I couldn't get a speaking permit. I said, we got to do something to protest. So Garrity, and he was a private investigator, and he violated the office rules for lawyers. How Garrity came along, I went to a lawyer because I was charged with causing a disturbance in the park. You know, thousands of Jews wanting to get at me and tear me to bits. And when I was thrown in the paddy wagon for protection, the mayor of Toronto said, we got him, boys. We got him, boys. So what? I went to a lawyer to defend it, to prove I didn't even open my mouth. I was beaten up. So the lawyer hired this private eye to try and find an independent witness in the park who had seen me running for help and saw that I hadn't said a word. Mm-hmm. And you're not allowed to do that. You cannot be acting for someone and then turn around and be used. So when the lawyer hired Garrity, he smelled a buck here. So he went to the Jewish Congress and said, hey, I'll drive this guy around and everything. So he drove me, and that's where I was mumbling earlier, and I'm guilty, and to your listeners, I apologize. I jump around so much. But earlier on in this talk today, I referred to the fact that unlawful interference with private property, you can't put a cardboard anything on a doorknob with string on it. The string interferes with the lawful enjoyment of private property. I'm probably the only person who can't ever get charged with it. So, yeah, so 4 months in the slammer for the and the judge turned to Garrity and said, Mr. Garrity is equally as guilty. I turned to the Crown Attorney down there, I guess you call them district attorneys. I turned to the Crown Attorney and said, well, the judge's statement says right here, Garrity is guilty as I am. Is he going to jail? Is he going to be charged? Of course not. That Crown Attorney ended up becoming a judge. I could name you half a dozen that have climbed up the ladders on my back, and I'm not crying the blues. I'm just stating a fact. All political careers, etc., because they stopped this Nazi.
Yeah. Okay, so would you say now that you do say, I think, that you never were a Nazi, and yet you realized that you were for 6 years appearing in the guise of a Nazi?
Absolutely.
Canadian.
I didn't even know what I was doing. I was stirring up what I thought was Canadian patriotism, kicking my people in the teeth. I guess I could backtrack a pinch, because the Hungarian Revolution was the first political thing in my mind. I remember sitting back. I was 14 years old, and my mother and stepfather, a few others, playing cards. I said, look at this. They're shooting and killing students in Hungary. Isn't this horrible? They could care less. And I said, you know, if that was communist flags coming down the street or a swastika, you'd be upset. They could care less. Mm-hmm. I overreacted the Vietnam War. I don't know. But I still admire Pierce and Rockwell, because they wanted to set something up against the establishment. I don't know why Rockwell had to choose a swastika. I think it was his charisma.
Well, I think he really did. I think you said you didn't think he was really a National Socialist. I think he was, and I think he admired Hitler so much and all of that he was going to use it.
Yeah.
You know.
But
he also liked the shock value. He did say in that Playboy interview that even what he was saying to the interviewer was a lot of pretty strong stuff, but it was to make people pay attention and talk about it, because he was of the opinion, obviously, that you weren't going to get anywhere if you didn't get plenty of public attention.
But and I think he would have with his charisma. I got you, and I appreciate what you're saying. I just feel it with his charisma, absolute charisma, and his speaking ability. How can I put this? With his charisma and speaking ability. Somebody's trying to Skype me right now. I'm just ignoring it. He would have made it. He would have made it if he had just chosen a different symbol. And yet, what am I, a hypocrite? I don't know. I was in Pierce's home. I was their guest. I spoke at one of his deals. He was in my home in Canada. You know, I don't know what to say.
Well, you're pro-white. You're absolutely pro-white always. But being a British, being a proud British Canadian, you're really not a Nazi, and you don't want to be portrayed as one, although you fell into that. Well, I can understand when people are young, and particularly if they're drinking, how that can happen. I imagine it can happen. So I think it's great that you tell the truth about it and that you're willing to talk about it, because now you're a one of a whole number, but the difference between these people and you is that you're not Jewish, but this Incog man wrote a very good article about what he called Jewish Nazis, and he named Frank Collin, who's really Cohen, and then he named James Gutman, who's really Mordecai Levy, and these were all people who pretended to be national Nazis and start organizing. They really wanted to just make parades and so on, you know, to stir up, to stir up the Jews to get active in trying to pass these laws to protect themselves from Nazis and so on. And then there was, James Rosenberg, who portrayed himself as Jimmy Anderson, head of, what was his called? Armies of the Right or something like that. And then there was, Grant Ristau, who infiltrated the Heritage Front, a Canadian Jewish advocacy group, in the 1990s. And in the mid 90s, a guy named, Hawk would, who presented himself as Commander Bo Decker, was another commander of a Nazi party, you know, and he, infiltrated the Knights of Freedom Nationalist Party, or he created it as a Nazi group, Knights of Freedom Nationalist Party. And all this stuff, he was Jewish too. All these people were Jewish. And another, his real name was Greenbaum. And, that's enough of them. So, they're busy setting these people up, but they just managed to set you up too. It's pretty interesting.
I just feel disgusted with myself, really towards German Canadians and British Canadians and those of German British stock, because, you know, no one likes a deceiver, but I wasn't deliberately deceiving. And no. You give me an excuse, the booze or whatever, because I never even thought about it. It was just a big roll.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, okay, I think it's valuable because you are able to show and to say, you know, how it came about and who was behind it. And this is how they do this, you know, and we need to know this. We need to understand there's infiltration going on all the time and people are not wise to it. And we have to expect that it's going on. And we do have to be a little bit more, we have to be more careful. Well, to get back to the British People's League and so on, something you'd rather talk about, we have another comment this time from this Tom fellow who asked about Warman. And he's saying, how about a map of Europe showing the separate countries of Europe all covered by a large white umbrella as a symbol? he's thinking of a symbol. But, you know,
he's on the right path.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's
on the right path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what about your current plans and so on? I know you do podcasts, and your podcasts are very enjoyable, particularly that last one you did where you talked about this subject that I had brought up with you about your Nazi past. And I guess a lot of people that know you as the British People's League don't know about that. And, you know, that's kind of gone
into
the past.
I
brought it up.
I know. You know, talking to you, and I thought, well, to hell with it. You know, it'll come up someday. And some people use that excuse not to get involved. But, no, I'll spell it out. But it gets back to money again, and I'm not asking for help at all. But I can say this honestly. If – like my pension with the gray hair covers the mortgage on the house. But if I had enough money to revisit the choir members who are still out there in the States, Ohio especially, I've got some beautiful contacts. I know I could stir up in-house meetings. I have the ability to stir people up to our cause. And that's my dream. Now, Griffin over there, with all the controversy he's had, he just received a $500,000 donation. Now, I don't want to sound like all these money grubbers. All I'm saying is that if I had $2,000 a month, I would be stirring up, I promise anybody, all over North America, legally, without being arrested, in private homes. I've done it before. I've gone to Quebec and I've stirred them up. I'm very proud of that. So that's my dream. In the meantime, just keep plugging along. But I'm really glad you're
there. Yeah, there are people here too in the United States who start organizations, and they're very good at getting money. They're very good at, and you don't know how much they get, but they seem to get a lot, and they pay themselves, they pay other people. You know, here at the White Network, we're brand new, and it never even crossed our mind to pay ourselves for anything that we're doing, because I've never been paid for what I'm doing in this area. But I've often said that people need to pay attention to who they send the money to, rather than sending it all to one group. They should spread it around and help some people who are really going to use it. Because I know a lot of people here who survive on very little, and they do a lot of good work on it. If they had a little more money, they could do more. And it's just a shame that other people get some big bonanza of, you know, thousands or hundreds, 100,000 or something. Yeah. And when you get that much, you tend to think, well, we're rich, you know, and just throw it around or waste.
Yeah.
Or put it in your own bank account, maybe.
Yeah. I just want to make it very clear that, you know, I've not wanting to make a dime, but I do know I have the ability to stir people up. There were 4,000 people at that get together that you, the picture that you put on to highlight the show today,
mm-hmm.
4,000 people. Now, some of them were they just like Beatty stirring up the crap, but also, that was the week that James Earl Ray was hiding out in Toronto. Now, I don't know if they thought he was going to pick me up, because on the hotel overlooking the area I was speaking, honest to God, they had police snipers. I couldn't believe my eyes. And I thought, well, they're all jittery, because James Earl Ray was hiding out in Toronto that very same weekend.
Oh.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of extra things, fate involved. But I do want to praise you, Carolyn. I've listened to all kinds of podcasts and so on. And you ask probing questions, but you're still polite. You're perfect. Oh, you're perfect at the job.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I'm sure not everybody agrees with that, but that's
well,
very nice
you
of
are.
You to
you're
say
the best.
That.
Oh, you're as fair as can be.
Well, thanks. That's nice to hear. Well, so you do your podcast, you've got all your meetings, you do ask for donations, and you let the people know that you're not getting what you need. If you could, and if you had them, you could do a lot more. And I don't fault
that
at all, because I can tell that you are, you know, that you're sincere, and you're not, it's the way, you know, you can tell.
Yeah, it's not for my pocket.
That's right. And you are working. As you said, you work at a job, 5 days a week, I guess, as a paralegal in Canada. And because that's in law, in the law field, you have to be careful, and you know that, and they've told you that you better.
Oh, yeah, I've been warned that I my image must stay professional, whatever that means. So I'm okay so far. And just as you, you know, if you have donations, it's to improve your radio network and so on. Likewise, you know, I got to be honest, you know, 50% of the people out there asking for donations, it's to do more for the white man's cause, not to mm-hmm. put money in the pocket.
I should when I say that, I just feel that there's some I should be careful about that, because I shouldn't be accusing people of things I don't know, and I'm not naming any names either, but I just think that it's something that people who are donating should pay more attention to. I've said that before. They should do more, what's that called, you know, work to investigate and ask questions, so that they know that their money is being used for what they want it to be used for. It's up, you know, just like with us people, you know, it's up to us to do a lot more. It's not up to just say, oh, here's somebody who speaks out, you know, good. And, you know, and not do anything yourself. Everybody needs to do more, more careful research and looking into things. And also, I wrote a comment last night about linking podcasts to other, to, you know, comment boards and websites and, forums and so on. And the same would be for your podcast, to send links around. How much do you have people are your people there in Canada doing that, sending links around of your podcast and really getting more?
Well, none, because I'm too nervous as to what the other guy's going to say. The only one, well, I should try and get a link to you. I'll have to do something about that. I mean, you've been good to me today. It's just you have to be so careful. Not Section 13's gone, but you don't want to look like a dingbat, you know. And when you link, then you got to worry about what the other guy's saying. You really do. I've linked to this Candor magazine because they cover all aspects of the spectrum. And the guy talks my language to a T about those are British stocks sticking together, etc. But yes, I have a conscience, so we'll have to get a link of caroljaeger.com somehow. I don't even know how to do links, but I'm glad I don't know how because I don't want to do links. I'm selfish. I want people to read our page. I don't want them coming in and linking up with everybody else. That's selfish.
Yeah, well, I just mean links to particular programs and so on.
We've got to get a link to yours.
Well, you don't have to. No, you don't.
Oh, yes.
No, they might not like it. You know, they might say, oh, what is this radical person and why is he linking to this?
No.
Now, then they won't like you. I'm not asking for that. But I just, I think that our people who are, what I'm trying to say is that people who are supporters, whether they're supporters of me or of the White Network or they're supporters of you, you know, different people I'm talking about, in Canada should send stuff around. Should send, say, links to your podcast or so on to get them more highly listened to.
I'm not trying to butter you up, but I spread your webpage, et cetera, through my blind list. And on my blind list, I have key people. Practically everybody in my blind list has their own network of about 25 people. They've been doing it for years. So when I spread the word, it goes around the globe in the English speaking, German speaking globe for sure.
Well, that's very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. Now,
I love that blind bit. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. You tell me about that. Blind CC. Yeah. Blind carbon, blind copying. Yeah. So that people.
Oh, I love it.
It's great. Well, all right. We've just got a few minutes left. Let's see exactly. We've got 3 minutes left. So what would you have any closing words? I know you're never at a loss for words. So do you have anything more you'd like to tell?
Well, spread the word about Carolyn's website here. And I admire you, Carolyn, for promoting the history of your peoples and how they've been wronged. And I admire anybody who does that. I just want to work with people like John Gerhart did in the 70s. He's a trooper. He's still out there and some people listening in, and Caroline even knew he worked for prisoners' rights. But he tried his best for white unity. So what we've learned hopefully today from this 2 hours is, you know, fine, we may not all be able to glue together. We're going to argue over certain things, but let's just try and nudge closer together without the fighting that, you know, David was talking about.
Well, yes, and you know, you give me an opening to say something I've been wanting to say, and that is that second to Americans, you know, United States people, in visitors to my website, caroljaeger.com, is the UK. I have a lot of people from the UK, and I should be nicer to the British people than I sometimes am, and I'm very happy, therefore, to have you on today because you're a representative of the good British people, it's been a great pleasure to have you.
Well, John. Mine too, Carolyn. Thank you. I'm very honored.
Well, I'm glad we've become friends and that we will be able to continue to contact one another. And so I wish you all the best. And usually I do my ending so late that I'm rushing it. Now, you know, when I have a little time, I don't quite know what to say. But ladies and gentlemen, this has been Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn Jaeger, and my guest has been John Beatty, and his website is www.britishpeoplesleague.com. So go and visit that and see what he's got to say there. It's very interesting. He's interesting. And so we will have another good show next week. Come back.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at caroljaeger.com.